Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History. If you're new here, I'm your host, Megan, and I'm here to bring you all things spooky, eerie, and haunted with a sprinkle of history. And if you're already following this podcast, welcome back. It makes me very happy that you're here for another show. I hope everyone had a good weekend. I ended up having a movie night, which I always think is a great way to end the week. I'm a huge suspense, horror, thriller fan, and I actually quite recently rewatched a movie called Shutter Island. If you haven't seen it, it stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo, and without giving anything away, it centers around an investigation at Ashcliff Insane Asylum, and it's of a patient who escaped who's responsible for multiple murders. I remember when the movie first came out, I think it was around 2010, and I just loved it. I thought it was so clever, so I wanted to rewatch it again all these years later to see if I still liked it. Because, you know, sometimes after a bit of time, you might watch a movie again and think, oof, why did I love that? Or you could even go the opposite way and think, wow, why didn't I love that? So I rewatched it, definitely still love it. It's such a good movie, and it got me thinking about how eerie and unsettling historical asylums are. When we look back at the history of asylums, we can see some of the most horrific treatments imaginable have been carried out to patients young and old. So it's really no wonder why asylums are labeled as some of the most haunted places in the world. The sheer volume of people who were sent to asylums to get better only to end up dying from being there, it's very hard to comprehend. And well, that brings us to this week's show. This week, I'm taking you to the Beechworth Lunatic Asylum in Beechworth, Australia. Like many asylums from before the 20th century, Beechworth has a very dark history. So little was known about mental health at the time that most of the treatments administered to patients would absolutely be considered torture by today's standards. Shackles, chains, electrocution, lobotomies, being submerged in cold water, and being purged and bled were just a few of the many things that patients endured. And according to records, most of those admitted to Beechworth never made it out alive. In fact, it's reported that over 9,000 patients died while staying at the facility in the 128 years that it was operational. Beechworth was ultimately decommissioned in 1995, but it remains to this day in its original condition. It's now known as a hotspot for paranormal activity as the ghosts and spirits of the mistreated patients continue to roam the halls today, still unable to escape, even in death. Sitting on top of a hill overlooking the town of Beechworth, Australia, sits a huge historical estate that at its peak housed 1,200 patients and employed over 500 staff. I thought this was a very eerie spot for it personally, but the location, interestingly, was said to have been chosen because they believed that the altitude would assist in cleansing patients of their illness. So they actually thought that the winds could quite literally blow the illnesses away. Interesting. Before the Victorian era, mental health was such a taboo subject that even the slightest sign of a mental health issue and you would have been immediately thrown into a madhouse and left there indefinitely. Anyone born with physical or mental disabilities would have been admitted, even those with minor learning difficulties or even things like OCD or ADHD. And also, this makes me cringe, but husbands who had disobedient wives could have them sent away. Sometimes you didn't even have to have a mental health issue. Foreigners who didn't speak English would be mistakenly sent away, and there were even instances of a person being admitted simply because they were poor, and people thought they would eventually be a burden to the community, so might as well lock them up now. Inside a madhouse, as they often called it, which prior to the 1800s had no regulation at all, the conditions were so bad, it was enough to actually drive someone insane. Locked away, held in small cells, usually freezing cold, dirty, diseased, starved, and given no medical care, no visitors, and often isolated. It would have been an absolutely horrendous way to have lived the rest of your days. In the 19th century, however, things would start to improve. And by improve, I mean the actual conditions of the facility got better, but now you had doctors and staff experimenting on you and documenting it for the advancement of medical care. So some would actually argue that it was worse, because now doctors were permitted to conduct experimental treatments, some of which were just purely torture. A journalist named Nellie Bly actually went undercover in an asylum, not Beechworth, but a different one in the US, in the late 1800s. She's pretty much noted now as pioneering this new kind of investigative journalism. So her task was to convince experts that she was insane and needed to be committed. She was under a lot of pressure. She didn't know if she'd be able to do it. So what she did was stay at different boarding houses, and in front of the staff, she would start to do things that a crazy person would do, meaning things that would, at the time, warrant you being put into an asylum. So she would wander around, she wouldn't sleep or eat, she started yelling out random things at random times, and eventually one of the matrons of the boarding house called the police and she was taken to the asylum. She ended up writing in her book that although she acted calmly, the doctors still diagnosed her as being positively demented with no hope of recovery, which begs the really big question, what exactly were they doing to test? And that just gives you a better idea of how many people were likely admitted to asylums that absolutely did not belong there. She stayed there for 10 days and documented everything. And if you want to know more about her experience, she did write a book called 10 Days in a Madhouse, which you can find at most bookstores or online. So back to Beechworth. In order to be admitted to the asylum, you only needed to have two signatures. In order to be released from the asylum, you needed eight. Eight. Just right there, you can see how impossible it would have been to ever leave once you were admitted. Inside, bars covered the windows. Brick rooms were painted white. You were often restrained, and patients who tried to harm themselves had leather mittens locked on their hands. And if they tried to chew the gloves off, they would have had a tooth pulled, a lot of the time with no sedation. And if they repeated this, they would lose more teeth until eventually all of their teeth were gone. They had to follow a schedule which would have included outdoor time, meal time, and treatment. Any protest, disobedience, or outburst would have had you immediately shackled, restrained, and a lot of times punished. And punishments ranged from being beaten to being strapped upright to a door for hours or injected with various drugs to quiet them. There were also, not surprisingly, many sexual abuse claims. Treatments were sometimes completely experimental. I'm going to share some of the treatments so you really get an idea of what it was like living at the asylum day to day. Hydrotherapy was a very popular treatment. There were a lot of ways to utilize this treatment, but most commonly, the patient's hands and feet were tied, and they often had a sheet over their face, held tight so that they couldn't scream, and they were submerged in freezing cold water, and then held under for extended periods. They would do this until the patient became submissive. Another method was to spray them with high-pressure cold water. You see this depicted a lot in movies, and unfortunately, it is very true to the time. Humoral treatments were also popular. It's when the expert feels that the patient's fluid levels are unbalanced, so they would blister, vomit, or bleed them, which sounds absolutely horrific, so of course, I had to look it up. Essentially, they believed that mental illness was a disease of the body, and so humoral treatments were prescribed to purge the body of melancholic humors. So with blistering, they would put a substance on the skin, usually some kind of chemical, that would cause huge burns and blisters. As the patient healed, it was thought to draw out the illness. Next would be vomiting. They would induce vomiting, typically by using a swing chair. You would swing in a circle while in a straitjacket until you became sick and lost consciousness, hopefully resulting in vomiting up the illness. And finally, bloodletting, which is when they drain your blood in large quantities in hopes that they've drained out the illness. Pretty wild, right? Sometimes experts even thought that mental illness was caused by infected organs. So some patients had their stomachs removed, or parts of their intestines, appendix, thyroid gland, and essentially anything they felt could be removed. They tried to remove it. This obviously did not fix anything, and the majority of patients died during surgery or afterward. Schizophrenia patients were often injected with malaria because doctors thought that high fever would kill the illness. And then next came shock therapy. And when we think about shock therapy, we often just think about electric shock therapy, which actually wasn't the only type of shock therapy delivered to patients. First, they began to try insulin shock therapy. They would inject high amounts of insulin into a patient, causing them to go into a coma, and after several hours, they would be revived and supposedly cured from their illness. Obviously, they weren't cured of anything, so this would be repeated daily for months until amnesia, brain damage, or death occurred. Once shock therapy proved to be unsuccessful, they moved on to electroconvulsive therapy, which is where patients are shocked with electricity, inducing a seizure, which supposedly helps cure you. At one point at Beechworth, it was noted that the entire population received ECT in one single session. Interestingly, ECT therapy is still to this day incredibly controversial because some medical professionals do still offer it as a treatment for different illnesses. In fact, Carrie Fisher, who you might know as Princess Leia from Star Wars, volunteered herself to routinely receive ECT treatment. Who knew? I honestly had no idea. And I don't know enough about current ECT treatment to have an opinion on whether it's beneficial or not. However, my great-grandmother had paranoid schizophrenia. She was from the Netherlands, and she immigrated to Canada during World War II, and she routinely underwent ECT therapy when she was here. She was actually in the first group to receive ECT in Canada, and her experience was not good. And it ended up creating a fear of medical professionals. So when other treatments became available that could really help her, she was completely against trying them because of her fear of doctors. And this, of course, led to a much lower quality of life. And I'm sure things are different now than how it was done versus 50 years ago, but I just don't think it would be something that I could advocate for. Moving on to another common surgical treatment, the lobotomy. A lobotomy is a surgery where the frontal lobe of the brain is detached from other parts of the brain. So just knowing the way this treatment is performed, it gives you a horrifying visual of what they had to do to get to that point where they knew what part of the brain they were entering and messing around with. So how many failed experiments on how many people had to have been done over how many years before they reached that level where they had an idea of where they were going for this operation? What's even more surprising is that lobotomies still aren't banned today in many countries. I don't think that they're performed, but they are still technically legal in several places. Lobotomies routinely left patients in a vegetative state with massive brain damage and, of course, caused death. And when patients recovered, they were often called zombies afterwards. During the procedure, an ice pick was hammered into the eye socket and then wriggled around a bit. They did this by lifting open the upper eyelid and driving the ice pick up into the brain. Because the brain doesn't technically feel any pain itself, the patients were awake and given a sedative for the pain of hammering into the skull. Absolutely horrific. If you do a Google search, some pretty grim photos of before, during, and after the procedure will come up, so you can take a look at those yourself. So now that you've been given a bit of insight as to what the patients at Beechworth experienced every day, you can probably understand why a good majority of their spirits have remained haunting the grounds. Let's get to the hauntings. as I mentioned before, the site is currently open to ghost tours. And it's not surprising, given its history, that people flock there to experience paranormal activity. People who have visited have reported hearing things, having sensations, things touching them. They've seen figures in photographs, and they've seen apparitions in different rooms of the asylum. The most famous ghost of Beechworth, I would say, is Matron Sharp. She was definitely not your typical caretaker in asylums like this, because she, unlike many others, truly cared for the patients, which, let's be honest, was super rare during this time. She would bring in fresh flowers, she showed kindness and compassion, and she even left her own children in care so that she could work full-time at the asylum. Her ghost has reportedly been seen since before the facility was even decommissioned. In fact, other nurses who worked there said that they could see her ghost sitting with patients who were waiting to receive electrotherapy treatment. The ghost of William Whitehead, a former Beechworth jail inmate, because remember, asylums also took overflow from the jails. So in the asylum, there would be men, women, children, and jail inmates. William was the first person to receive a surgery at Beechworth within hours of its opening, and he ended up dying from complications, although his death certificate would say that he died of insanity. After his death, his body parts were preserved in formaldehyde and stored on bookshelves. Of course, they're no longer there today, but they're still said to be stored in the original cellar of the asylum. William's ghost is frequently felt in the laboratory. Visitors reported feeling strange sensations on their arms and face, and some have heard deep growling noises. Tommy Kennedy is another patient whose ghost is said to hang around the former kitchen. Tommy not only worked in the kitchen, but he was also a dab hand. So essentially, a dab hand is someone who transported dead patients out of the hospital. They did this using a cart, which they actually called a meat wagon. Yes, they actually called it a meat wagon. He died in the kitchen. We are not entirely sure how, but that area is now a part of a theater that runs there, and visitors have claimed that they can feel someone grazing their skin or pulling at their clothes. There are two spirits that occupy the recreation hall, which is where patients were allowed to have music time, sing, dance, or just hang out. One is a young girl who tries to communicate with the female tourists, but no one can make out what she's saying. It just sounds like faint whispers, which aren't really understandable. There's also the ghost of an older man who used to be in the bell tower. His presence is said to be frequently felt in the room, observing the tourists as they come and go. One visitor said that at one point she could see her own breath, despite there being no dip in temperature, and then when she entered the matron's room, she and another tourist felt a rush of heat over them, and they started sweating, but then the sensation completely disappeared when they left the room. Additionally, when she made her way to the autopsy room, she feels confident that she saw a figure in the hallway positioned in the shadows. Other sightings have been from strange figures in the windows to people that felt a breeze or a shift in temperature, and it's also very common to hear noises, such as the faint sound of whispers or creaking coming from the rooms. There is one particular claim that I found very interesting, and that's the claim that a figure appeared in a tourist's photograph that was taken at the asylum. This picture actually went viral, so you can find it out there right now in social media land. And the ghost tour company operator said that it cannot be explained. The photo that was taken by the tourists apparently shows a transparent type figure standing in between them. The tour operator frequently says, check your photos when you get home, because apparently it's quite common to capture spirits in photos. You'll have to look this one up for yourself because it is very interesting. I know a few people have commented on the viral photo saying that it looks like a double exposure or that it could have been doctored afterwards, but the tour operator very firmly shuts that down. So I've actually had a look at the photo myself, and yeah, it looks pretty creepy, But I also know the things that people can do with photos and videos today, like deepfake videos, for example, which are incredibly realistic. So I think the only way to know for sure would be to have a photo investigator, which I think actually is a thing, and they would have to investigate the original file or see the original photo or however that would work. But it definitely does look pretty eerie, so go investigate for yourself and see what you think. So now that we've reached the end of the episode, I have to ask, do you think the abandoned Beechworth Asylum is haunted, or is it a hoax? If you're interested in having your own paranormal experience, you can always book a tour at the asylum. They run day and night, and they offer ghost tours, historical tours, either group or private. And I think I need to add this to my list of places to visit. Yes, it would be an interesting choice for a vacation, but I think I would definitely do it. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. Make sure to come back next week for another episode of Haunted History.